Good afternoon. Welcome on in to Kildare Focus. You're listening to Kildare's KFM. It's Tuesday, the 3rd of October. Caoimhe Hearney here with you until 3. Coming up first on today's show, we'll speak to Colm O'Leary, Interim CEO at the Adoption Authority of Ireland. He'll be telling us about the new Birth and Information Tracing Bill. At 2:20, Terry O'Callaghan, professional organiser, will tell us how to declutter your home and your mind. At 2:35, Wendy English from La Leche League in Naas will be telling us about National Breastfeeding Week and about how learning how to breastfeed takes time, patience and support. Lastly, we'll hear from Frank Dillon in Alone because they provided record amounts of elderly supports in 2022. If you want to get in touch with the show, you can call in 045 898 999. You can email me to studio at kfmradio.com or you can send us in a text or WhatsApp.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Hearney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, more than 3,800 people have applied for birth tracing information over the past year. That's according to the Adoption Authority of Ireland. The Birth Information and Tracing Act, signed into law by President Michael D. Higgins on the 30th of June last year, officially launched on this day, grants people the right of access to birth certificates. I'm joined on the line now by Colm O'Leary, Interim CEO at the Adoption Authority of Ireland. Good afternoon, Colm.
Good afternoon and thank you for having me on your show.
Delighted to have you. Tell us about the significance of this act.
Happy to do so. Yeah, so prior to this legislation in 2022, people who were adopted did not have access or did not have the legal right to their birth certificate or early life information. So adopted people did not have that information and they were prevented from getting it through GDPR and other reasons. So this act that was enacted last year allows for adopted people to be treated the same as non-adopted people, to have the same rights with regard to their own records. So that's when the act was commenced, this particular act, on the 1st of October 2022. And there was a surge of people applying for their birth information. So they're looking for their birth cert, their early life information, any records that exist in the state through the various agencies on their early life. So this is for adopted persons. And we did get a surge. There was a very busy media campaign, which included radio adverts, TV adverts. A leaflet was dropped to every house in the country and leaflets were provided to libraries and outside of Ireland to the ambassador networks in Europe and even in the state. So it was a big campaign. And we were very happy to see the large number of applications coming in. We were inundated in the early days, having almost 1,500 applications in the first week. And just to clarify, there are two agencies that are getting these information requests. The Adoption Authority is one side, and TUSLA, the Child and Family Agency, is also getting applications for birth information.
Okay.
So the applications started coming into both agencies in October, and we did have a significant backlog, which writes to all the people who had submitted their request saying that we would not be able to deliver their information within the timelines set out in the Act. And my predecessor even wrote a letter saying they wouldn't get them until autumn of this year. And true to form, we have now gone through all of the 3,800 applications. We're down to the final 36 today that have been received in the past month, and we will be providing this information to the last 36 shortly. So we've got to the end of the backlog, and now that the legislation is a year old and that we've got through the backlog, it's never been a better time for a person who was adopted to put in an application to search for their birth info on birthinfo.ie. That's the website, birthinfo.ie. You can put in an application for information. You can also apply to join the contact preference register, which I can talk to you about. And also you can apply to initiate a trace. So say as an adopted person, you can apply for a trace to find your birth mother. And we will start that process with you.
Okay. It must be amazing for people who maybe have gone their whole life not knowing about themselves really from the early years, then to have this opportunity to go and find out maybe if they have living relatives or their birth parents or whatever. Just explain to us how it would have worked in the past and maybe how it works now, Colm. Because
well, in the past, you wouldn't have been given access to this information.
Yeah.
So the Act that allows that the Birth Information and Tracing Act allows the adoption authority to take in records as they become available. And these records are continuing to become available. We are receiving, we're about to receive, you know, sets of records from various institutions in the coming weeks and months. And that's something that will continue on. And we will be constantly, you know, on the lookout for records of agencies that are closing and agencies that have had these records in their offices and didn't know what to do with them. Mm. So we're getting all of this information in and we're digitizing it as we go. We're scanning it and we're attaching tags to each scanned document as to the names and the dates and everything that's in it. And that will assist with tracing and with searching for information. So now when a person wants to find their birth cert or any other information that may exist in records as to their birth and their birth parents and their early life, they can put that application in through Birth Info. You'll have to provide us with proof of identity. You create an online account and you apply for your birth information. Okay. On that Birth Info website, there's also a list of all the institutions that records are available. And if you want to click on any particular institution, any guild or any adoption society or mother and baby home, it'll tell you who holds those records, and that's where your birth information request should go. So after you put that application in, we will search through the record and return to you everything that we have. We'll only redact out information that is not relating to you, that's relating to somebody else, but anything relating to you as an adopted person, you will be entitled to get. Some people are getting information, they find out the name that they were called when they were born, rather than the name that they were given as an adopted child. They'll find out some information about their birth parents, and they can use that information possibly to take the next step, which would be either to initiate a trace on a birth mother or a birth sibling, for example, or they could put their name, an adopted person or a birth parent can put their name on a contact preference register, which allows for us to record what their preference is with regard to contact. An adopted person, for example, may not want to hear from their birth mother, and they can put their name in that contact preference register and say, I do not want to hear from anybody who's trying to trace me or contact me.
Right.
And similarly, a birth mother can do that too. They may have handed up a child for adoption in the 60s or 70s, and they're aware of this, and it's constantly easing at their mind. And they can put their name on the contact preference register saying, I do not want to be contacted in the event that my child comes to the adoption authority seeking to contact me or trace me. I do not want to be contacted. It could be the case that they've moved on from that time in their lives. It could have been 17, 18, 19 at the time when they had that child, and they're now married and in a relationship with other children, and they don't want the two families to connect. So they may want to be able to control our actions when that child that they give up for adoption is seeking to make contact. So that's why the contact preference register is so important. It balances that right to privacy that parents have, and it's a key provision in the Birth Information and Tracing Act.
Okay. In terms of, though, people maybe who are going looking for their original, you know, birth certificate, how would they have navigated in the world without, they obviously have a birth certificate, like, themselves now, it's just not their original one, Colm, or how does that work?
Yeah, they would have had a birth certificate. It may be the name that was given to them at birth. You know, they could have been illegally registered, like it happened in the past, that mother and baby homes would have given a child to adoptive parents, and if they would have recorded in records that child was their natural child, and a child may not know that they've been adopted, and it may not have been revealed to them that they've been adopted. So that's really what we call an illegal birth registration. So that could be the case. And sometimes things can happen during life that will make them aware that they're not a blood child of their parents, and then they may start that journey. So they may have had documentation, or they may have been told up front that they've been adopted, And if that's the case, they can apply for any information that's been held on them. And we're not just talking about people in the 50s and 60s. You know, there are people, there's been adoptions through intra-country that have happened in the last 10, 15 years where people may wish to initiate a trace, and they may want to make that trace back to the country from which they're adopted. It could be Vietnam or the Philippines or Thailand, and they may want to progress that trace. And again, we will facilitate those type of tracing requests. So it's a journey that people go on when they initiate a tracing journey. When a person who is adopted, for example, puts in that tracing request to trace their birth parents or their birth mother, for example, a social worker will meet with them and discuss their search journey so far, what records they've consulted, and then they'll talk through with them the potential outcomes of a search. Because when an adult, for example, tries now, for example, to search for their birth mother, the birth mother may be deceased. The birth mother may have put their name in the contact preference register, not wanting contact. And those are outcomes that we need to prepare the person for when they're starting that search. Mm-hmm. We've also had cases where people have put in applications to trace their birth mother, and we have traced the birth mother to a particular house, and we've written to that birth mother in that house saying, you know, your son, as you've called him, is now seeking to make contact with you. And then we'll get a letter back saying, my name is John. I see that you're trying to contact my birth mother, Breege, and unfortunately, she passed 5 years ago, and I'm wondering if I can help in any way. And we have to relay that information back to the person who initiated the tracing. And, you know, we regret that your birth mother is no longer living. However, we believe that you have a sibling. And, you know, that's a big bomb to drop on a person who's initiating a trace to who searched for their birth mother to find out that they've had a sibling that they didn't know about. And again, social workers will guide and support and assist with them in dealing with that new information.
It's a very emotive thing, I'm sure, for everyone involved. I have a message in here, Colm, maybe you can help me. KFM, hi, I contacted the Adoption Society and they told me there was no record of me from Mary. What do I do now? Thanks.
So Adoption Society, so that's unusual. I don't know if it's that authority or society, but if it was to the adoption authority and we didn't have any records, we will hold that name and file. Out of the 3,800 people who applied for their birth information, there are 206 who did not get any records so far. But as new records come in, we will continue to search for details of those 206 people who did not get their information so far.
Okay.
So they can put in another application if they wish. Because we will continue to get new records as time progresses, put in an application again. But if you have put in an application and we've returned to you saying no records, we will continue to search and we will on your behalf and contact you if we get any information.
Okay, and as you said there, you know, you're keen for birth parents to come forward and join the register if they so wish, so that they can connect with their relatives.
Or connect or the opposite, to stay removed, you know, because it's a very traumatic time for any mother to, and I'm obviously kind of speak from that experience, but to hand up your own blood and blood for adoption. So that's an extraordinarily traumatic thing to do. And some people had no choice in that. So to do so, some birth mothers may want to black that out in their lives. They may want to just leave it in the past because they will probably be living a different life now. So they may not want to be contacted, whereas others may be a little bit longer on in their life journey. They may be more open to it. Maybe they've mentioned it to their existing family that I do have a child that from my distant past that I gave up for adoption, or that I was obliged to, that was taken for me and was adopted out. So those people may go onto the contact preference register and indicate that they do wish to be contacted or share information or medical information, because, you know, sometimes there's hereditary illnesses and you may want to notify people that there's a hereditary illness that, you know, you may want a birth child to know about, and we will again deal with that kind of information. And it's worth noting as well that people change their minds with regard to this preference, and we've had lots of people decide to change you know, 2 years ago, I wasn't interested in getting contact. But now I've just been through some life events in my, and I would like to converse with them maybe by letter. Mm-hmm. So preferences change. It's not something that's set in stone forever.
Okay, so even if it's a no, maybe at first, it might be different down the line, maybe.
Yep,
Just in terms of what you were saying there about, you know, health records, etc., do people have a right to know that, though? You know, do they have a right under this new act to know their, you know, previous medical records or, you know, family history, etc., even if the parents don't?
If that information exists, no, it's their health data. It is their entitlement, and we would provide health data. And we've had specific requests for health data, you know, people wanting to know if certain things are genetic or inherited in their side, and we've had people look for specifically for medical information alone that they already possibly had their original birth cert, and they want to see if there's any other information about the health of the birth mother in the adoption file, that would have been there that could be helpful for them in their own personal health journey.
Okay, Colm, just one last thing before I let you go. Just in relation to that text message to that woman, to get on to yourselves again, the Adoption Authority of Ireland, make contact, maybe records have changed or whatever.
But if they have changed, we'll get back to her. But okay. She can put in another request, you know, if she's followed the same process, or she can contact us. And I'm just trying to find on our website our personal contact details. It's a Dublin number. I'm just waiting for it to load. I'm sorry.
No problem. A 01 probably, is it?
It's a 01 number, yes. And the telephone number is 01-230-9300. That's 01-230-9300.
Okay, Colm O'Leary, Interim CEO of the Adoption Authority of Ireland. Thanks very much, Colm, for joining us this afternoon.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, do you end up dropping your clothes on the floor because there's no room in your wardrobe? Do you feel overwhelmed by lots of garments but still can't find that one thing you're looking for? Do you dream about more storage space? Well, if all of these things are you, I'm joined on the line, luckily, by Terry O'Callaghan, who is a professional organiser. Good afternoon, Terry.
Hi, Caoimhe. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for coming on with us today. Unfortunately,
pleasure.
All of the above is me.
And You're not alone, Caoimhe.
I don't know where I went wrong. My mother is like a grade A organizer. Her house looks like a showroom all the time.
Yeah.
So tell us what to do.
So it's so common. Oh my goodness. We all have clutter. Every home has clutter to a degree, but obviously it's unique to everybody. Everybody has, you know, a different situation. Some people have more than others. Very, very common. We can have things, you know, we can have things in our home. I don't believe in, you know, having a minimalist home, because we need to live in our space, we need to enjoy it, and we need to be happy in our space. But it's when it comes to a point where you just feel totally overwhelmed, you're anxious, you know, you can't see the woods from the trees. You think, oh my gosh, you know, I left the keys here last night and now they're not there. And a lot of the grief comes from not having maybe, you know, an organized system in place in your home. And, you know, that's kind of the bottom line for a lot of people.
Okay. If you're like me, right, where I have been brought up with a system, do you know, like I've seen the systems take place, like, and I know what to do, but I can't seem to get the system to work for me. Like, even when I organize things, within a day or two, it'll just drop back into the old way.
Yeah. A lot of it is, you know, a lot of it is down to the amount of stuff you have.
Okay.
You know, that's not one of the number one things I've seen with people. Clutter creates clutter. The more you have, the more clutter you seem to accumulate. Whereas if you've, you know, the less you have, the less you have to manage, the less you have to organize. So I always say to people, you know, start off, you know, have your system, you know. Let's say your wardrobe. Wardrobe is a good one at the moment. A lot of people are looking at their wardrobes. You know, they're decluttering with the seasons, okay? So if we use that, for example, so you've still got maybe some of your summer items out, but you're also using your winter clothes. So, you know, I was in a home recently and I saw a lady and she did have a pretty good system in place. But all the summer stuff was on top of the winter stuff. You know, those big woolly sweaters, you know, caught up with little, you know, holiday gear that she had when she was out in Lanzarote. So we broke it down. I said, okay, you know, let's prioritise what we have here, break it down, and let's get everything organised. So we put all the summer clothes in one area for our seasonal storage. We looked at items, maybe Quiva, that maybe were a bit faded, a bit dated, and rather than putting everything back in again to, you know, the pile for next year, let's remove those items. Let's decrease the amount of stuff we have, okay? And, you know, maybe if there's stuff that no longer fits us, put that into a pile and say, okay, maybe we sell it online. Maybe you make some money out of it. You know, but people say to me, there's a bit of resistance. Terry, I can't let that go. You know, what if I need those items? And I said to people, okay, how long have you had that? And they might have had it 2 or 3 years and nothing happens with it. I say, okay, you know, they call it their expensive mistake. I say, okay, you know, you spent a lot of money. Let's put it to one side and you sell it on. Maybe there's other items that you no longer need that could be given to charity. So that kind of, you know, we wilted a lot of stuff out before we put stuff back into, say, our storage. Focus on the winter stuff. Look at stuff that you had maybe last year, the year before that. Does that item still suit you? You know, you have to look at yourself, Quiva. You know, we all change. Obviously, hair colouring, you know, our size, image. You know, something that we wore 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Does that still suit us? And if people say, well, actually, no. Okay, get that stuff out. Okay, you're left with a much more organised pile. Okay? And then I say to people, okay, you know, we get the jeans. Let's get the jeans in one area. Let's get all your jumpers. Let's do things by, you know, colour. I think colour is great. And then get all your small little items and, you know, put them into maybe a dressing table. You know, decide which drawer you're going to have every item in. And, you know, that breaks it down immediately for people, Quiva.
Do you think, Terry, that people can change? Because you see people, you know, I have people in my own family and you know, certain people, they're like really organised, always have been, always will be, I would assume. And then there's others and like their house will get, you know, cleaned and maybe decluttered, etc. But a few weeks later, like I said, it goes back to the same. How do you stop that cycle?
Everybody can change. There is resistance when it comes to cluttering, decluttering and getting a new system in place. And decluttering is all about change, Quiva. And, you know, the majority of us don't like change. You know, we resist it. The subconscious mind likes keeping us where we're at. We're comfortable, we're cozy. You know, we're happy where we're at. But I say to people, you know, it's all about changing your mindset. You know, we can do it. And decluttering is all about how we think about it. If we approach it and we say, no, I can't do it, you know, we'll be kind of, I don't know. Whereas if we say, I can do this, we can do it. And I say to people, look, you know, think positively. You know, break it down again. A lot of it is breaking it down into chunks. And when I work with people, I say to them, look, you know, I say, you can do this. We've done this. You know, spend 15 minutes every day after I've gone or even before I come in, you know, to help you. And, you know, prioritise what do you want? How do you want your kitchen looking? What do you want, you know, to have on the worktops? You know, take a lot of the stuff off the worktops. You know, do you need, you know, I was in a house recently and they had 2 kettles, 2 toasters. You know, they're about 20 saucepans. Do you need all those items? Remove those items. Get into a good routine. You can do it. Remove the amount of stuff in your wardrobe. Keep, you know, I say to people, have a visual. Maybe take pictures of how we have a wardrobe or a kitchen, you know, when I finish with them, Quiva.
Okay.
And I say, visualize that. You know, visualize, you know, the impact that can have on you. You know, get your new system in place and just keep it going and just keep that process going. And you know what? The more you do it, you know, the more you'll get into a routine and the more that will work for you. And, you know, you'll actually do very well. And I believe everybody can change. You know, I got my daughter who's nearly 11, you know, to clear out her playroom recently. And I said, okay, Sophie, you know, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to have it. And I think by just having a place for everything, you know, so you know where to go to every day for those items, Quiva.
Okay, great, great advice there. I'll try and put it into practice. Terry O'Callaghan, professional organiser. Thanks very much, Terry, for joining us this afternoon. This week is National Breastfeeding Week in Ireland, and experts are saying that learning how to breastfeed takes time, patience and support. Well, luckily I'm joined on the line now by Wendy English of La Leche League in Naas. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Hi, Cleaver. Thanks for having me on.
Delighted to have you, Wendy. I think you would probably agree with those three words that it would take time, patience and support.
Absolutely. And the most important thing is probably support. Just, you know, getting that village around you, people who will support you and help. And, you know, because motherhood is challenging, so it's really good to have people in your corner and get that expert information before baby arrives. So that's what we're here for in La Leche League, just to support the mums.
Okay, and you give free information support to people in the Naas area, of course, you're Naas, but there are different groups across the country, aren't there?
Absolutely. We've over 100 leaders throughout the country, and basically we run monthly or even sometimes more often meetings where mums can come meet up with each other, learn from other mums. There's information going out by WhatsApp. There's information going out on our website. You know, we try and share as much as we can before baby arrives. And then if anybody has any issues, they can come to us, give us a ring. We're on the phone 365 days a year because we are volunteers and we're more than happy to help anytime you need us. So it is important that, you know, the mums know that we don't, you know, don't be afraid to lift the phone. Give us a ring if you're having any issues, and come to a La Leche League meeting, ideally before baby arrives, so that you know who to call if and when, you know, that you're breastfeeding and you have a question, because questions will always arise.
The medical consensus is that breastfeeding conveys significant benefits to both mother and baby. Breastfed babies have lower mortality and increased protection against infectious disease, while feeding mothers are at lower risk of several cancers, anemia, diabetes and osteoporosis. But the breastfeeding rates here are still fairly stubbornly low, Wendy, in comparison to other countries, aren't they?
They are indeed. Now, the last figures we have would be from 2020, and that had showed that 62% of mums would initiate breastfeeding. So that means that babies are getting breast milk as that very first feed, which is fantastic. That's, you know, nearly two-thirds of mums in Ireland would like to breastfeed. But what we're seeing is that those same statistics say that 36.7% have introduced formula, aren't exclusively breastfeeding by the time they leave the hospital. So those rates are dropping very quickly, you know what I mean? And we want to support those mums. They need that information. They need to know, what if this happens, what can I do? You know, because, you know, there isn't a rule book for every baby. Every baby is individual. Every baby is different. And mums, you know, always know themselves and what's right for their family. And we just want to support them in that. And if they want to breastfeed, you know, we're the ones to call to say, we understand how important this is to you. Here's what can work. This is what's worked for other mums. This is the information that's out there, the most recent information on how to deal with whatever issue they might be having.
Mothers born who were not born in Ireland have higher rates of breastfeeding than those born on the island, suggesting that some combination of social and cultural factors are at play there. Do you think that breastfeeding is a little bit of a taboo still, Wendy?
I don't think it's a taboo. As I say, two-thirds of mums would like to breastfeed. So I don't think it's that. I think it's the knowledge has been lost in Ireland. You know, we're coming from very low rates. So people may not have seen their mums breastfeeding. They may not have seen aunties breastfeeding. They may not have been breastfed themselves. So it's all that information has been lost in that generation. And building it up again takes time. And that's where, you know, seeking out your tribe, seeking out people who've been there before you, who've done it, you know, and encountered those issues before you have, because usually there's nothing ever unique. There's always going to be some mum who's had that situation before, and we'll have tips on how best to cope with it, you know, and that's where you know, meeting up with other breastfeeding mums can really be beneficial.
Okay, there may be people listening in here now and they are pregnant, maybe they want to breastfeed, but equally there may be people listening in thinking, oh God, like I can't stand the thought of even trying to breastfeed. What would you say to those women?
If they can't stand the thought of breastfeeding, I don't know what issues, you know, they've had, but whatever they are, those are very personal to them. Mm. And that's absolutely their decision. Mm. We're here for, you know, if they want to chat about it, they're more than welcome to ring us. Okay. But if they're certain that that's not for them, then that's not for them. You know, we're not here to change people's minds. We're here to support people who want to breastfeed. And there are so many out there who are not reaching their own personal goals. And that's what, you know, that's what La Leche League is for, to support people to reach their goals in breastfeeding, be that very first feed, be it, you know, a week in, be it 2 months in, be it 6 months, or be it like 5 years. You know, you just don't know what that mum has in her mind. And it's really hard when you see a mum who's looking to breastfeed and they're encounter difficulties that stop that happening. And, you know, that's disappointing for the mum, and we just want to support them to reach their own goals.
Okay. In terms of the support then at La Leche League in Naas, like if there's a women listening in right now, maybe who are at home about to throw in the towel thinking, okay, I can't do it, like can they literally pick up the phone and say, this is my situation, and you guys will be there to help?
Absolutely. That's what we do. You know, I'm here to take WhatsApp calls, to take phone calls. If I'm not free straight away, I'll get back to you. So it's just, send a message. My mobile number is on our website. It's www.laLecheLeagueIreland.com. There's also a group in FI. There's groups in Carlow. There's groups in Portlaoise. There's groups in Dublin. There's plenty of groups around that you can lift the phone, chat to somebody, send a text message, send a WhatsApp message, send an email, whatever way you're comfortable communicating, and we'll get back to you and offer support. And again, oftentimes what the mum needs to know is that she's doing well. You know, if there's a small issue, what she can do to overcome it. If it's easier to sort a small issue than a big issue, so don't be afraid to phone when it's becoming an issue. Don't wait until it's a huge deal to give us a ring, because it makes so much more difference if you get in the early days and suddenly find, oh, that was a bit painful. Right, if we tweak it a little bit, you know, that can make it better, rather than it's become really painful and then it needs time to heal before you can get back to comfortable breastfeeding again, you know. So just phoning us early, it can help. And as I say, if you're pregnant and thinking of breastfeeding, come along to a meeting, get in touch by text message or WhatsApp or whatever's comfortable for you, and we'll send you on information. Just, again, knowing who to call if you have any difficulties.
Okay. Wendy English, La Leche League in Naas. Thank you very much, Wendy, for joining us this afternoon. Now, Alone, the charity that supports older people, provided 22,300 supports across every county in Ireland last year, the highest number in the organisation's 45-year history. Well, I'm joined on the line now by Frank Dillon, Head of Communications at Alone. Good afternoon, Frank.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe. Good afternoon to your listeners.
Frank, I suppose not good news that people are reaching out, but not good news that so many people are feeling maybe lonely or like that they need support.
Yeah, no, it does show a growth in the need and the moral alone. Our volunteers and staff reach out across the country that, you know, we are coming across more need and more people in need of supports and anything. I suppose that's the thing about Alone. We support older people in anything, whether it's loneliness or housing issues or other issues. So, yeah, no, we are finding that there is a need, as much as because we're coming out, since we've come out of the pandemic, but also just an underlying need in society, with the ageing population demographic shifting that way.
Your members and volunteers provided €2.5 million worth of support to older people last year, and a total of 994 older people were given a Christmas dinner in addition to the charity, making 5,161 Christmas calls last year. A huge amount of money there and a huge amount of time put in by your volunteers. Just in terms of, you know, the cost of living crisis, do you think in the last year or 2 years that things have got progressively worse?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And in our pre-budget submission, we did a survey with the older people we work with ahead of us. And 9 in 10 of them, unfortunately, said they were no better off from the last budget to earlier this summer. And 76% of them were very concerned about the rising cost of living. Heating, of course, being one of the primary ones, because it's a health issue as much as anything else. But food comes very close second, and food costs, and it can be a big concern, especially if you live alone, because it's a very expensive way to live.
Loan also reported an increase in the number of older people experiencing loneliness, along with unprecedented demand for help with energy bills, as you were saying there. In terms of loneliness, do you think that's down to like bad infrastructure, not enough services? What is it that we see this, increase?
It really is, Grieve, a combination of things. There's a lack of inertia after the pandemic. I mean, we were very quick to isolate everybody, and we had to at the time. But now it's about opening up the services, and yes, a lot of day centres and daycare centres are open, but they're not all open to the same extent that they were. Like, they might be open 1 or 2 days, whereas before COVID, they were open 5 days a week. And transport is a big issue as well, especially in rural areas, where people just can't get access to get out. And it can be, and then again, the cost of living as well, because it can be more expensive to go out and have a coffee or a tea or just visit people, or, you know, so it really is a combination of things. And it's something we've seen across the life course, because Alone is a founder of the Loneliness Task Force, which represents, it is a representation of over 13 organisations all across the life course whose members are witnessing the same levels of loneliness. And it is an issue that we're combating every day.
It is, you know, said this week, the Independent reported today that it's expected that there will be a €12 increase in the state pension. Do you think that'll go far enough?
Unfortunately, I don't, Grieve, and it does sound generous, and it's, any increase is welcome, but this government committed to benchmarking the pension and just taking this sort of lotto out of us, where, you know, it's a debate every year, is it €10, is it 15, is it a fiver? Because if you benchmark it to 34% of the average industrial wage, which the government committed to doing, well, then it just takes the debate out of it. It just keeps people above the poverty level, because unfortunately in 2023 we have 165,000 older people living in poverty, and they're usually people who are solely reliant on the state pension. And the pension is an entitlement after a lifetime of work and paying taxes, and it should really be pegged at a decent level that keeps people above the poverty line.
What would it look like then if the government had kept their commitment and it was 34% of that?
Well, we're asking for, in our pre-budget submission, we're asking for $27.50 this year, and then they have one more budget to catch it up to 34% of that average industrial wage, which will probably require a payment of another $27.50. Mm. But that's just keeping up with the cost of living, because the cost of living has, and everybody across all ages are witnessing it, you know, the spikes in costs, whether it's energy, food, nearly everything, it seems like, has gone up.
In terms of volunteers then, at Alone, are you always looking for new people to come on board and help out, Frank?
We are, very much so, and throughout Kildare as well, we have, you know, we've a need. We've older people waiting to be matched. We'd ask anyone who's interested, if they even inquiring about it, to check out the details on our website. But it really is, it's something that, you know, and time again, volunteers report having, they get a benefit out of it as much as the older person. It really is something that can be, it can become a very special bond, whether it's a cross-generational situation or it's just somebody a few years older and somebody more capable, and they call in and they befriend people and they offer some support, and then the Alone staff have a whole infrastructure behind that where they're able to support volunteers and deliver those supports that are needed. And it really is, it's a great intervention, if I want to call it that, but we are always in need of volunteers.
Okay, and I'll give out the number for a loan if anyone needs it. It's 0818 222 024. That's 0818 222 024, and you can call that number. It'll cost no more than a local call to a landline, and they're always happy to take your call there at Alone. Frank Dillon, Head of Communications at Alone. Thanks very much, Frank, for joining us this afternoon. That's all I have time for today. I'll be back at the same time tomorrow between 2 and 3.